This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. This week, violence and race have hit us in a way many of us have never seen. Violence and race, though, are not new. The Detroit Journalism Cooperative has been looking at the civil rights movement of the 1960s. Some of the core issues then are some of the issues we're struggling with today. You've got to understand the history to really understand what's happened this week. One of the experts I've been talking to over the last several months is Joe T. Darden. He's a professor of geography at Michigan State University, and he researches segregation and inequality. I started by asking him about the 1968 Kerner Report, which was issued by a presidential commission. It reported on racial uprisings and riots in 1967. It looked at the grievances of Black America then and suggested remedies. The report was largely ignored. Darden says that's evident today.
You still have Black unemployment rates twice as rate as white. Sometimes it gets even higher than that, but that's still the case. And that's been the case back in the 1940s. Since 48, they've had, whenever they start doing statistics based on race, the Black unemployment rate's been twice that of white, no matter what. The economy gets better, still get the divide by race. It gets worse, the divide expands beyond the twice as rate. That's what the data show. So things have not gotten better. They may appear, but they have not gotten better on that piece. Education, same kind of thing. You haven't had a situation where there is a quality of education that's equal. Whenever I talk to students in my class, I said, anybody in this class believe that the education that people receive in the public schools is equal by race? Not a single student raised their hand. So they know it's not equal. Then I ask the question, what are you going to do about it? And that's usually silence on that point. So they don't know what to do about it. So in a sense, you see, it's not equal. We know that. Housing, for example, the same thing. Housing still remains segregated by race and class. Now, I emphasize more when it comes to residential segregation. I'm less concerned about segregation by race per se. I'm concerned about the inequality in neighborhoods that that segregation brings. That's the piece that's important.
Let's talk a little more in depth about those issues. Job inequality, income inequality were noted in 1968. As you said, it's still the issue that's keeping many African-American families in poverty in Detroit and across the country. What, if anything, has changed?
Well, in terms of job opportunities, that situation has gotten worse, and in part because of where the jobs are. Jobs are unevenly distributed. The opportunities are still like they were when the Kerner Commission said we're moving towards two societies, one Black and one white, separate and unequal. They were referring to the fact that the jobs were moving outside of the city where Blacks were concentrated and the jobs moved to the suburbs. Unless Blacks follow those jobs to the suburbs, as most whites did, then you're going to find increasing inequality when it comes to issues of unemployment. That was part of the problem. And along with increasing unemployment, you find the inequality in income. Which is what we've had over the years, and that has gotten worse. You're right. And also, in the economy itself, there has been a continuous inequality with the upper income groups getting a disproportionate share of the wealth, income as well, in part because of public policies, which have perpetuated that. Those who are getting the least amount are those at the bottom of it. A large proportion of those people are on the in those jobs that do not pay even the minimum wage. And if it does pay the minimum wage has not increased sufficiently over time. And if you look at inflation, in fact, we're probably worse off now than we were back then in terms of absolute income they're receiving. That is part of it. And so you get the increasing gap between those who are at the bottom and those at the top. And the other thing is the educational level. Those in the cities, Blacks in the ghetto, do not get a good education, and they don't receive as much of it in terms of educational attainment. Those figures also reflect it. And if you don't have a high school diploma, the job you do get is going to pay low wage. And if the jobs that you get pay low wage, even at the minimum wage, you're not going to be able to rise very high when it comes to income. And so that's going to perpetuate income inequality.
In Detroit, the public school system has been, well, it's been a mess. I mean, the graduation rate has been something like 50%.
Well, not only that, but see, the education inequality, you have to look at two things, which is what I do. Educational attainment is one, and that's just going through 4 years of education, of high school. Educational attainment. That does not say anything about the quality of the education you receive. So there's a gap in educational attainment between Blacks and whites, and there's also a gap between the quality of education received between Blacks and whites, even when they get that diploma. Does that education reflect equality? And the answer is no, because as long as you get the education in the public schools of the central cities, Detroit being one of those, you're not going to be getting an equal education. That's guaranteed. And that's going to continue as long as you're trying to educate kids in places of concentrated poverty and concentrated race. They're never going to be equal because the resources are not going to be the same. The teachers are not going to be paid the same. The educational experience of the teachers is not going to be the same. You're going to have separate, unequal education. And in fact, in Detroit, the situation is not only worse than it was in 1967, but worse than it was before you had Brown versus Board of Education. Blacks got a better education then than they're getting now.
There's a lower rate of home ownership among African Americans in Detroit today than there were in 1970. Rent is often higher for black residents, and the housing is worse. And the Fair Housing Coalition is still finding discrimination.
No, I know. I find the same thing, and I work with fair housing people. I worked with them for years. Here's the thing. There are some whites, and maybe probably the majority, that believe there's no problem anymore. We had the Fair Housing Act. People can live anywhere they want to. And so what are these complaints about? I mean, what are they complaining? If they're there, they're by choice. That's where they want to stay, right? There's no problem. We're not doing anything to them. That's a belief, right? It's not based on fact, but it's a belief, a perception, which is untrue. It's a problem when you talk about getting public policy to correct the problem when there's a large segment of whites believe there's no need for the public policies. But I think the more we educate those who are willing to listen, the better we're going to be, because without that, I don't think you'll get much change. As long as whites think there's no need for it, or they think that those blacks are there because that's where they want to live. And so there's no need to change anything. And we do need changes, but they have to listen to it. Keep in mind, before the Fair Housing Act was passed, it was outright overt. I recall it vividly down Grand River that when black professors would try to come to a real estate broker to get a house, they would pull down the blinds and put a closed sign up. We're closed. You can't come in here. We're closed. And a white person comes, no problem. So that's what they did. And I tell my students about East Lansing for that very reason. I said, look, you're living here. You don't know what it was like years ago. And they're surprised that Lansing, an educated community, but when it comes to issues of race, education goes out the window. And that's what happened in many of these places. The population is not so educated when it comes to issues of race. They really are not.
Lack of jobs, poor city services, high taxes, high rents, and high crime combine to make life pretty tough for low-income families in Detroit. In fact, high crime causes stress levels that can damage kids for life. Because they have so little money, families don't feel like they have any options. What can they do?
Be honest about it, I've looked at those things, and when I looked at them, and I asked the question to those who are in that situation, why do you continue to tolerate this? Can you afford to move? Do you want to move? And oftentimes, they don't know they can move for the same price or slightly more than they're paying now. They don't know that. And so they're there because they think that's the place that only place they can afford. It's a myth. It's not true. And so I have to sort of show them other options that they have. I said, what are you paying now? Oh, I'm paying $500 a month. I said, okay, here's my data. And I showed them. I said, for $500 a month, here are your options here. Here's the crime rate there than it is here. Here's what your taxes are here than there. Show them that. And they said, I didn't know that. That's the difference. Others have taken advantage of it and moved. And I go back and look at them again and say, what took me so long? And that's what they're saying. And so I like to take the approach of the geography of opportunity. You find out where the opportunity exists, and you move there. That's the solution to the problem, as opposed to waiting for somebody to come and do something about that crime. Is not going to happen. You have the decision in your hands to make. Once you make it, you can improve your livelihood. And that's what I tell them.
It's certainly not something Mayor Mike Duggan is going to want to hear. He wants more people to move to Detroit. He sees that and downtown development as a way for the city to come back.
I want it to rebound too. But I don't think it's going to happen, given the situation. That's all. I'm not saying I don't want it to rebound. I just think the people suffered enough. I'm not concerned about those developers. I really am not. They're going to make their money anyway. And they're going to make their money on the backs of the people who are in the city of Detroit. I'll say they're doing a great job when they start helping those people out there who've been in those neighborhoods, suffering all that. If they're helping them, I'll say great. If they're not, I'm going to say they're not. And that's what I see right now. I don't see that happening.
For those who don't move or won't move, for those who want to stay in Detroit because it's home, A big problem has been transportation to get to a job. The auto insurance rates in Detroit are the highest in the nation. The Detroit City buses don't connect all that well with the regional bus system, SmartBus. There's a proposal on the ballot this fall to fix that, make a city suburb bus system work. But a lot of employers won't hire you if you depend on public transportation. What's the answer there?
Well, the public transportation, the way it is structured, was intentionally designed, this is in Detroit, and other places too, intentionally designed not to connect the city of Detroit with those suburban communities. That was intentionally done. So in that sense, it was a way to prevent those blacks and other places in the city from getting access to the suburbs via transportation, public transportation. And the piece that perpetuated that was the race piece. A lot of suburban communities just did not want these blacks coming out there for jobs, anything else. And so that was intentionally designed that way. And I don't think it's going to be connected sufficiently anytime soon, no matter what talk. They've been talking about this for years. I recall back in 87 when I wrote a book on Detroit, Race and Uneven Development. That transportation system was there then. They were trying to do it then in a regional approach, and race prevented it from happening. And I think that's what's going to happen again. It's all a matter of resisting these population groups on the basis of race. It's not new. It happened other places as well. I mean, they stopped that transportation network right at the boundary sometime, and you can't get across. That's not enough. If race were not there, I think you'd have a situation where the regionalism would occur, and you'd have a much better Detroit metropolitan area when it comes to equality of opportunity and so forth. Race gets in the way every time.
In the 1960s and 70s, the police and community relationship in Detroit was really bad. It's one of the major factors in the 1967 uprising and after. At that time, the police force was overwhelmingly white. At this point, it's majority black, not quite the ratio of black citizens of the city, but closer. In a lot of cities, especially rapidly changing suburban cities such as Ferguson, they have an imbalance. Majority white police force, majority black residents. Detroit Police Chief James Craig has said last year, Detroit doesn't have those racial tensions. Do you think that's true?
It is not fair representation in the sense of the population, which I think should be the case. Now, the ratio should be the population of the city, racially, should be reflected on the population of the police force. That's not the case. It's not there yet in terms of that, but more than there were back in 1967. That's true. However, the representation on the police force racially is the first step in the process. It's not the final stage. It doesn't guarantee equal treatment just because you have that. To get equal treatment, you start with that, sure enough. Then you have to go beyond that to start dealing with policies and practices. Now, an ideal situation would be where the police officers police the neighborhoods, and in fact, it'd be nice if they lived in the neighborhoods. That's an ideal, if they actually live there. If they don't live there, you need to have practices in place and policies of community policing where they actually walk around the neighborhood, know the people who are there. That is the second in that process of preferences if you can't get them to actually live there. Now, as you recall, Coleman Young tried that as mayor. He tried to deal with that police force when he came in. He tried to get community policing. He first tried to change the composition, which he did quite a bit. And that was a problem because the white officers did not want to do it. And now what did they do? He did pass he passed policies that said you have to live in the city of Detroit. And they said, no, we're not going to live here. How do you do it? They went to the white legislature in Michigan and said, pass us a law to tell me we don't have to live in Detroit. And they did. And so once they did that, those who did not live in the city didn't move there. And those who lived in the city left. And so you got a police force of whites coming into the city, policing the place, and then leaving in the afternoon. That kind of situation is always going to cause increased tension. They're not going to know the people they're policing, which was part of the case in Ferguson. Police officers didn't know the people on the other side of town. That's a bad situation. Now, interestingly enough, the current commission recommended how it should be done, but they didn't do it. They recommended exactly what I'm saying, community policing, that kind of thing. That's ideal. I don't think they even looked at those recommendations. They also recommend that the police forces not be so militarized. And what did they do? They militarized the police force. So in a sense, they didn't follow the recommendations of the current commission. I don't think they read them. If you read the commission's recommendation now, you'll say, this is exactly what's going on here. Why didn't we know this? They didn't do it. Obviously, they didn't do it. So what has happened? The situation is actually worse now than it was then. And we had more blacks killed now than there were back in that time. Now, one thing that's interesting to me that bothers me deeply, even when you have, in many cases, a black mayor, and I know Coleman Young fought this, but in some of those places you have black mayors and blacks are still getting killed disproportionately. That's an interesting situation to me. That is a situation where I don't think these mayors are taking the full responsibility of dealing with the police officers, either out of fear or out of resistance that they can't handle, but it should be something they should do. If the black community can't even count on them to protect them when they're in those kind of positions, what do they do? Where do they go? And that's a situation that caused more frustration, and they don't know what to do about it.
We've talked about how in many ways the black residents of Detroit are living in circumstances worse than they were before the uprisings of the riots of 1967. Around the country, we're seeing more protests now, for the most part peaceful protests against victimization. But are we about to see history repeat itself? I mean, with the grievances outlined in the Kerner Report, which for the most part have not been addressed, will that lead to the kind of uprisings we saw in the 1960s across the country?
Well, I'm not saying that it is true. I think the potential for the place to explode again exists because the grievances are still there, and they get worse sometimes because there's no avenue that is reliable for those who have these grievances to get them addressed in a way that they feel confident that they'll be treated as they should with the grievances. No city at this point that I know of has something in place that is controlled by the civilian population, that when you get a grievance against any of the situations involving the police department, you can get your grievances addressed and you can trust the process that's engaged in those grievances, trying to solve them. That doesn't exist. The Kerner Commission recommended that. It hadn't been done. And so it hasn't been done in large part because the police, white police, usually white police, resist that. They don't want that. And so as long as you don't have that in place, this population you're policing is not going to trust the criminal justice system. And I don't blame them. Why are you going to trust? It doesn't prove that it's going to be fair to you. So you don't trust the system.
That was an excerpt of an interview with Michigan State University professor Joe T. Darden. He has authored or co-authored 7 books, including Detroit, Race Riots, Racial Conflicts, and the Efforts to Bridge the Racial Divide.
Support for the Detroit Journalism Cooperative on Michigan Radio comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, Renaissance Journalism's Michigan Reporting Initiative, the Ford Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.